Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good morning. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
We've had numerous requests to have a successful horse player on our show. Finally, we're able to do that. Our guest today is horse bettor Charlie Davis. We'll be talking to him in a few minutes. In our mail at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, one listener was upset that his local casino was restricting 9-6 jacks or better. It's a 99.54% game, and apparently even with the slot club points, our listener believes the house has the edge. Now they've cut the slot club points in half, which increases their edge. He can't understand why. Basically, there's a gap between players making money and the house making money. The house has numerous expenses, and certainly players do too, and the casino needs games to contribute towards that overhead. If a game doesn't make a certain number, say $50 a day or $100 a day or whatever it is in a particular casino, and the casino believes it can replace this machine with another game that will make that threshold, the good game disappears. There are some casinos that restrict games considerably tighter than 9-6 jacks, and there are many casinos that do not offer games as loose as 9-6 jacks, with or without a slot club.
Actually, this brings up an important point for people trying to make money at gambling. I want to be where the other players are not. So if all the wise guys in Vegas are off playing a certain game, which they are right now, that's the game I want to avoid. And I don't play a lot of video poker, but when I do, or if I were to attack it, I would be looking for the games that the other people are not playing. And you had a column some weeks back where you actually brought up a game that other players really aren't very aware of that actually is better than 9-6 jacks or better. But I think a lot of players are just lazy. They learn one thing and they don't want to learn something else. But, you know, if you're really interested in excelling, you should investigate this idea of trying to play the games that other players are not playing.
That's true. It's harder and more difficult, and most wannabes are lazier than the successful players.
Right.
Although I know some successful gamblers who are pretty lazy, too.
Now, guilty as charged.
This same listener says he's considering moving to Canada because they don't tax video poker winnings, and he doesn't like the tax rate in the United States. So, as far as I'm concerned, he should go if he wants to. Now, I like living in the United States and have no desire to move. Although Canada has its attractive features, personally I prefer warm weather. The tax rate on video poker jackpots would not be among my top 50 reasons to move, although you may have different priorities than I do. Also, all the games in Canada are set by the state, so there's little competition among casinos, and even with the taxation, video poker is much better in the United States than it is in Canada. But if you need to find this out for yourself, knock yourself out.
Yeah, and this is ridiculous because you get to write off your losses against your wins. So unless you're like a full-time winning player, well, you would pay taxes on whatever job you had here in the United States, whatever way you earned a living. So I don't know. It seems ridiculous to me.
Some people, if they can't complain, they're not happy. Yeah. Okay, let's talk to our guest. Charlie Davis is a former executive in the travel industry and has been betting horses since 2007. He uses a mathematical approach and computers to apply his craft. Charlie Davis, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, Bob. Hi, pleasure to be here. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Good.
How does automatic wagering work with respect to horse racing?
Yeah, well, it's as simple as taking your opinion and having a computer take care of it, so you don't have to slog through hundreds of races every day. There are really two primary ways it's used. The first is spot plays, where you say, if this condition or these conditions are met, bet some amount on the horse. And the second, which is what I do, is you have an odds line, and when you see value, so you think a horse should be 2-1, it's actually 6-1, you bet a percentage of the pool to get it closer to your fair odds line.
So when you do that, there you can only bet a certain amount, because the way Parimutuel works is your money is going into that pool and it drives the odds of the horse down. If you bet over a certain number, you could actually drive the price of the horse down below what you think is the fair price.
Exactly. You wouldn't want to bet a horse down to your odds line, because then if some late money comes in, it could go below. Plus, you have no edge if you're betting at the fair odds. So you want to keep some juice in there. Otherwise, you're eventually going to go broke. So it's really hard with late money coming in, some tracks closing later or sooner compared to the 0 minutes to post. Pool size, if it's a very small pool, then, well, you're just kind of guessing a lot of the time. So that amount you bet is just as important as the horse you bet.
So basically, you have a computer program that looks for specific conditions, and it automatically makes the bet for you. Is that
correct?
What you're saying?
Correct. Yeah. And in various pools, you know, sometimes the wind pool will be a perfect match, and the exacta pool, there's some overlays there. So yeah, I look all over the place. Wherever I see value at a certain level, I will take some of that value off the table.
So one of our listeners tweeted to us, Vegas Horse Pools, asked about negative – actually, he asked about what he calls horse jumpers, which –
Bridge jumpers, yeah.
Bridge jumpers. Sorry, yep. Bridge jumpers, which brings us to negative pools. So could you explain what a negative pool is, and then whether there's value in betting into those negative pools?
Sure, and I actually follow him on Twitter, so I'm familiar with what he does. There's two ways negative pools happen, and the first, which is what he's talking about, is bridge jumpers, and that's basically if you say takeout's 20%, yet 90% of a pool is bet on one horse, then if that horse runs out of the money — it's usually in the show pool, but it can be in any pool — if that horse runs out of the money, then you're getting paid much more than you should, and the takeout's negated. I bet anytime there's a bridge jumper, I'm betting against it. Not every horse. Some people will Dutch every horse. That's not what I do. I have a few more criteria involved, but
what does that term Dutch every horse mean?
Betting amounts on each horse so that you'll win the same amount if any horse wins other than the bridge jumper.
I see. Any horse comes in third, you're talking about, or you're betting them to win.
So say it's the show pool, because that's the most common situation for a bridge jumper. And there's eight horses in the race. You take out the bridge jumper and you bet the other seven horses in amounts so that you will win the same amount if any of those horses finish in the money. And if the bridge jumper runs out, you're going to have three finish in the money, so you're gonna do very well.
Otherwise, you're going to have two anyway.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to have two. You're gonna lose money that way, but not a lot.
So so what you're saying though is the bridge jumper pays 5%. The track, most tracks — there are a couple of exceptions, but most tracks they must pay 5% on that bet. And because of the negative pool, that's more than what they should be paying. But you're saying that that super favorite horse runs out of the money more often than 1 in 20?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. If you – I mean, I can't tell you every single bridge jumper, I'd have to look that up. But with my bets, yes.
Huh.
Uh-huh. Sounds like there are bridge jumpers and bridge jumpers.
Right.
Yeah. There's this one specific track, Mountaineer, where there's this guy, and he'll bet $60,000 on a horse in a $4,000 pool, and he'll just hammer those horses. And when he runs out, oh boy, you can get paid.
Huh.
I guess you can. All right. Now, you obviously use a computer. Is it possible for the guy who uses just a pencil and paper to win at betting horses?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I do that as well. Like when I play in contests, my computer system's running, but I'm not using it for my contest picks. So yeah, definitely. And some of the biggest and best players I know use computers just for record keeping. They don't use it for anything else. So yes, I think it's getting much harder with the computers now, because people like me can, you know, run a query on a database and test our ideas on a large number of races, as opposed to someone who's slogging through, you know, having to look at each past performance line and do a lot of work. So I think automating it makes it a lot easier. So I think the pen and paper guys are going to be up against it if they're not already. But you could definitely still win.
Now, you talked about contest.
Yeah.
Now, I know they have some contests at the South Point. I don't know anything about them other than when I walked through the casino. I've seen signs advertising them. Are those good contests to enter? Or what makes a good contest to enter?
Yeah, they're fantastic. I play in a lot of contests, and my favorite type is live bankroll. So that there's live bankroll where some of the entry fee goes to a prize pool and the rest is yours to bet. And, you know, sometimes there are minimum number of races to bet, sometimes minimum amounts, but you're betting real money. And you keep your bankroll at the end plus prize money. And the other is mythical, where you have a $2 win place bet and you just pick horses. That's not my forte, just picking winners. I much prefer the live bankroll. And that's what the South Point is.
South Point is live bankroll?
It's this weekend, actually. If I was there, I would play in it. And I believe they're giving away an entry or more to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, which is my favorite and the biggest cash tournament that there is out there.
Now, you said you don't use computers in contests. Why would that be?
Well, I probably misspoke. I do for my it's just different than my business betting. It's a different piece of software that is more of a custom past performance with kind of models built into it. The reason I don't use my business betting software is because those bets go in at 0 minutes to post, and it's too quick for a contest. I don't have time to look at the play that my computer made and evaluate if it's a good contest play and get up to the window or click on my computer if it's an online contest and make that pick.
So years ago, I think it was Ziemba, came up with this idea that I don't want to get bogged down in the math too much, but if you think a horse should be 5-1 and you know it's going, or if you think a horse should be 3-1 and it's going off to 5-1, that's a pretty easy thing to take advantage of. But if you have an exotic bet, so where one horse is 3-1 and one horse is 6-1, calculating what should the daily double, what's the fair price for a daily double, can get more complicated. And the more horses you add, the more complicated it gets. So is that a way to look for value by looking into those exotic pools and trying to find the overlays, because the public really has no idea what that bet should pay?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of times the public will, especially when you have a strong favorite, I think a lot of times the public will single that horse on top, play it a little bit less in the second spot, won't play it at all in the third spot in trifectas. There are patterns that the public plays with favorites and where they put their long shots. And yeah, I think there's a good edge to be found there. when it comes to the two race or the two horse bets, like exacto or double, you can actually see those wheel pays. So that's much easier to take advantage of because you have all the data right there. And I do take advantage of those. When it comes to the blind ones, trifectas, superfectas, it gets much more difficult.
How do you deal with the – I mean, there are a lot of professional players out there using very sophisticated computer models. And their money comes in at the very last minute. How do you deal with that, not knowing what the pool is actually going to be?
Yeah, I bet more careful than I statistically probably should, just to protect myself from those kind of things. I do get my money in as late as possible, but there's always a tick after I bet that I will never be able to bet it based on. So I as soon as it hits 0 minutes to post, my bets go in. There's going to be one more tick where everybody else's bets go in, and ADWs get with their clearinghouse and all the money comes in. There really is no, unless we had fixed odds betting like they have in Europe or Canada, there is no way to mitigate that other than betting less than you should.
Yeah. Can you explain what the ADW is and how that works?
Yeah, ADW is basically a website where you bet all the tracks across the country or world. And it's basically hooks you into the parimutuel system, the same parimutuel pools that the guy at Santa Anita is playing into and the guy at the OTB is playing into. And it's just a method to get into those parimutuel pools. Whereas fixed odd betting, you see a price, you put your money up, that's the price you're going to get. In parimutuel, you don't know what your price is going to be until, you know, 30 seconds into the race usually.
Right. And so the ADW money doesn't come in until – it doesn't show in the pools until after the race actually starts.
It depends. Like it depends on which tote system they use and when you place your bet. But a lot of money comes in at the after 0 minutes to post.
Hana, H-A-N-A. I know it's a really nice beach in Maui. What is it to you?
Yeah, so it's HANA, Horse Players Association of North America. And basically, our takeout in this sport is obscene. It's amazing there are any horse players remaining. It's over 20%, and the horse players are largely been ignored. So a group of horse players got together and said, hey, when these tracks are raising takeout or making other horse player unfriendly decisions, we need to tell them why it's a bad idea. So I'm part of this group, and we try and get a seat at the table with the racing jurisdictions that are looking at ways to increase their fields or increase their handle and try and help them make educated, mathematically based decisions rather than Joe Trainer says we need to increase this purse, so let's increase this purse. So that's basically what it is. It's free. We love members to be involved. People tell us all the time, hey, this is going on. Can you guys do something about it? And we always try and help. We put out a track rating every year, which shows the takeout at every track, which I think is the most beneficial thing we've done, because by drawing attention to the takeout rates, some people realize, you know, holy crap, I'm betting into a 30% takeout. I need to stop doing that. So I think it's been a big help to a lot of people.
But on these takeout figures, I happen to see that you're in charge of this, and the numbers you quoted in the takeouts were like 6% or 4% or 6.5 and 5.2 and 4.3. What does that mean?
Which part are you talking about? Are you talking about
You rank the best horse tracks in the country.
Yeah. Okay, so you're talking about the score.
Yes.
Yeah. The score is just a mathematical summary of each of the key scoring factors. It goes into more detail on the website, but it includes takeout, it includes field size, signal availability. So some tracks just don't want to give their signal to ADWs that will give you a rebate. Some do. Wager denomination. So some tracks have 50-cent trifectas, some have dollar trifectas, and pool size, because if a track handles 10 grand a race, doesn't matter how great it is, you're not going to be able to bet very much money into it.
So you just mentioned the magic word, rebate. So for people who bet horses in the United States, bet substantial money on horses in the United States, this is the most important factor in beating the races. So can you talk about how big the rebates are, and I mean that are available to people?
Yeah, it's tough to say here's a number, because it varies so much on where you live, how much you bet, what tracks you're betting, who you're betting through, all of that kind of stuff. So it's difficult. I wish it was a more simple thing, but if you play a high takeout track, like say Penn National, you're going to get a huge rebate, but the pools are going to be small because nobody bets into 30% takeout, or doesn't for very long because they go broke.
What does huge mean?
Huge means in the 20s.
So you would get a
20%
rebate
with obscene takeout.
Yeah. Okay. So you're getting 20% of your money back.
Correct. Yeah. Rebate is basically you bet $100, you get a percentage of that back.
Yeah.
But if you get to the more reasonable takeout and the more reasonable rebates, if you get over 5%, 5 to 10% on win play show betting, you're doing pretty well. And exotics, with the exception of the really low takeout bets, like 15% pick fives and that kind of thing, you should be over 10% on average.
So I want to take a quick moment to tell a story about the history here in Las Vegas.
Uh-huh. I love his stories, Charlie. You're going to have to put up with this.
So first of all, when I first moved here, the casinos would pay track odds. And rather than put the money in the pools, they would just match whatever the track paid. And we've told this story on the air a number of times about how we took advantage of that and beefed up a pool in Philadelphia and bet all the bookies here. And, you know, the horse paid $620 to show, like a horse that was a huge favorite in a five-horse race. But anyway, so then they switched to – now what happens is if you bet a horse here in Las Vegas, the money goes directly into the parimutuel pools. So about 20 years ago if the track was taking out 20% or something, the money that the Vegas casinos was putting in, the track would rebate like about 13% to the casinos here in Vegas. And the casinos here in Vegas would tell the big horse players, we'll give you 9.5% of your money back, right? It's good for everybody. Yep. So the Mirage basically had all of the action. The big players would get 9.5%, and they would get comps. So that's where the money went. And there was a little casino down by where New York is now, called the Boardwalk. And
with that roller coaster on top.
Yeah, they had a little roller coaster on top. And the racebook manager there let it be known to all the big players, I'll give you 9.75. Right? All the action moved. I mean, when you're betting hundreds of thousands of dollars a day, you know, that adds up, that quarter point. So all the action moved down to the Boardwalk, and the owner of the Mirage was not too happy about that.
That would have been Steve Wynn.
It would have at the time. And, you know, lo and behold, the Nevada legislature decided that it was an important thing for them to look into horse rebates, and they passed a law in Nevada that casinos should not be allowed to give horse rebates.
Don't think anybody from Las Vegas...
Hey, you know how politics in Las Vegas works. But so I think that the Mirage expected all the action to come back because at least they would have great comps. But instead, it, of course, drove all the action offshore.
Yeah.
So all
the
big players left. So Vegas really sort of shot themselves in the foot by doing this. So
it's incredible how rebates are such a dirty word, because you know the track that where the race is happening, they have a signal fee, so they're going to make their cut. In your example, say 7%, no matter what, and the rest, that 13%, is up. That's just margin. for whoever's taking the bet. If they want to give some back to the players and get the players to bet more, why on earth would you not want them to do that?
Well, this happens in casinos. The casinos have this same idea that if it's something is good for the players, it can't be good for them. And one example of this in casinos is a progressive jackpot on a slot machine. The casino doesn't own that money. It has to go back to the players. So why on earth should a casino care if professionals come attack a progressive when it gets really high? But, you know, you would think if professionals are going to fill up a bank of machines, play as fast as anybody can possibly play, and the casino is making their money on every spin, that would be good for them. But no, they bar the professionals. And the same thing happens in horses with these rebates.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense. And I mean, obviously, takeout should be lower across the board, which would minimize rebates quite a bit. But without that, nobody in their right mind is going to look at horse racing compared to other games of chance and say, hey, we should go to the 20-30% takeout. I mean, game of skill.
But
we should go to the 20-30% takeout option rather than the 1-5% option. You know, you're better off playing slots.
Yeah. But do you worry that the Joe Schmo gambler, between the high takeout and the money that's being taken out by the professionals, I mean, basically just has no chance at all. And horse racing has been declining in this country, right, pretty steadily for the last 10, 20 years?
Very steadily, yeah. And there's no question about it. If people come to the racetrack a couple times a year, they want to have a great time. But if they leave with more money, or they leave with some money in their pocket when they're done, and they've had a blast, well, then they're going to come back. If they leave with no money and they had a pretty good time, then I don't blame them for not coming back. It's right now there are not enough winners to help the game grow, which is why it's shrinking.
Oh, I just want to add one thing to that whole Vegas story. The Vegas casinos are not allowed to give you rebates. But most places will give you 3% of your action in comps. So,
okay.
You know.
I never bet much in Vegas. I was curious about that.
No, so. I mean, if I was a serious bettor, I wouldn't bet here because I can get a 9% rebate going somewhere else, why would I play here? But if you're kind of a casual player, 3% is better than, you know.
Yes, and 3% at the comp at the Mirage is better than 3% at the Boardwalk.
Yes, that's true.
And on some other show, we're going to talk about casinos barring professional progressive chasers. There are, I think, there's more to it than your example went into.
That's one good thing about horse racing. You're never going to get barred.
Well, I don't know. I have a friend who is one of the biggest horse players in the world. Well, several friends, but he has had problems getting paid sometimes, and he spends an awful lot of time with lawyers, collecting sometimes.
Hmm. Now, the Triple Crown. This year we had a Triple Crown winner for the first time in about a million years. Now, has that done anything to increase the enthusiasm for horse betting? Presumably, the enthusiastic players would be dead money, so which would be good for guys like you. Has this effect happened?
I don't think so, unfortunately. Of course, it was big press. Everybody was really excited. It's the first time in my life, actually, because I was born in 79, so it was a really cool thing. I lost money because I bet against American Pharoah every race. But no, I don't think it's going to give a bump to handle. I think it'll get some more people out to the track to see the horse, just like with California Chrome. So you'll get those big events or big days where people come out to the track, but the per capita wagering will go down because people are there to see a pretty horse rather than to bet on horses.
But the actual size of the pool is larger when they're running?
Can you say that again? I'm sorry?
The actual size of the pools is larger when they're running for that one
not
race?
Not by much, no.
Huh.
No, there are legions of people out there that just love horses and don't care at all about the gambling side of the game, and that's fine. But that's not increasing handle at all. They're eating and they're drinking and they're paying to get into the track, which is great, but they're not betting too much.
Huh.
So you're betting against American Pharoah. So presumably the implication is you think favorites are overbet, and so the value comes from not betting the favorites. Is this, am I reading this correctly, or am I too much oversimplifying?
You're reading that exactly right. And I think in those, at least in the Belmont, he was way overbet, but, you know, great horse, he won. So I'd still make the same bet next time, but it's hard to beat a good horse like that.
It's an interesting thing culturally that in the United States, people really like to bet the favorite, whereas in Hong Kong, they really like to bet the longer shots. Just a difference in culture, I guess.
You know, and I haven't done much research on Hong Kong. I don't know what their favorite win percentage is, but it's possible they have bigger fields. So it's possible that the favorites win a lot more here. And that's why, you know, Joe Schmo likes to bet the favorites.
All right. Now, assuming I know nothing about horse racing, which is a very reasonable assumption, and that I wanted to get into this, are there essential books to read? Is there websites I should look at? Is there, how can I smarten up?
Yeah, when I got into horse racing, I was contemplating poker and horse racing. And, you know, in poker, there's those books you have to read, Doyle's books and Slansky's books, that you have to have that base. And for me in horse racing, Barry Meadow he's a genius. And I read his book. I think it's called
Blackjack Autumn. That Barry Meadow?
Yeah, that Barry Meadow. He is a horse guy.
I think it's called Money Secrets or Money Secrets at the Racetrack or something. Sounds like a tout, but it's not. It's a great book, and it really goes through money management, value betting. I reread it at least once a year, usually twice, because it's so good.
What about Richard Ziemba's book?
I've read it. I have it. It's a heck of a read, that book. And personally, I found a lot of it to be dated. I read that one. I also read CX Wong's book, which is very, very heavy math and translated from Chinese, so it's a difficult read as well. I think you can get some stuff from them, but for a beginner, certainly wouldn't start with those books.
Well,
I'd start with Barry Meadow. I'd read Brohammer's Modern Pace, something like that. And I read Byer's books. He has a couple, Byer on Speed, and I forget the other one, but it's all about ticket structure, how he places ABC horizontal bets and that kind of thing.
Ziemba's book, doesn't it have a chapter by Bill Benter?
You know, I haven't read it for a while. I believe so, though.
Yeah, I mean, Bill is the probably the most successful gambler in the history of the world that I'm aware of.
I'm not saying it's not valid and it doesn't have good information. It's so far above people that are just starting that you'd be better to kind of build your foundation with these books and before you move on to something that complicated.
Now, you say you run we started talking about the automatic wagering. So you say you have these computer programs that will, you can do queries and you can structure. Now, do you have to program them yourself, or do you have to be a competent computer program to set these up? Are there some for sale? Are there databases? Sorry about that. I just got back from Italy and I'm talking with my hands, so I hit the microphone. I apologize. So how competent do you have to be in?
Well, if you want to do something automated like I did, you pretty much have to build it from scratch. Unless you live in somewhere that has Betfair available, then they have an API, which it's pretty easy, and there are all sorts of people selling systems to connect you to it. But here in the States, to connect to our parimutuel pools, you pretty much have to do it on your own. Now, if you're talking about the database side of things, where you just want to build a database of past performances and query those and build right models and that kind of thing, yeah, there are several programs out there that'll do that and will have established user bases that, you know, help each other out. HTR is one of the most well-known ones. I don't really know what that stands for, but Google it. And JCapper is another one that's one I use. So there's a couple of those.
Do you only bet in the U.S., U.S. horse racing?
Yes. Unless I'm in Europe, and then I'll go, you know, put some money down for fun. But no, seriously, I only bet in the U.S.
And
I've looked at Australia, but it just didn't work out for me.
Why not set up a system where you would be able to bet through Betfair?
Just the logistics of it. I would have to basically move to Canada.
Well,
which,
or
as
have
you guys
a partner
said in the top of the show. You know,
or have a partner that lives in Canada or the UK.
Yeah, I could, but I just the legality of those things. It's you know, I religiously track my results. I pay my taxes even more than I should usually. I don't want to get in any kind of tiff with the IRS or any other governmental organization. And it's just, I looked into it. It just wasn't worth the risk to me.
Okay. There's bunches of kinds of horse races, harness racing, thoroughbreds, maybe even, do they bet on quarter horses anymore? I don't know.
Yep.
Do you bet on all these? Do you specialize in one of them? What happens?
Yeah, I don't play quarter horses at all. I specialize in thoroughbreds, and I play a little bit of harness. The pools are much smaller, so it wasn't really worth my time to invest a lot of time and money like I did in thoroughbreds to come up with what I have. I play a few tracks, preferably ones with bigger pools, but thoroughbred is what I focus on. Plus with harness horses, I think their favorite win percentage is over 40%. I think it's like 42-43%, and that's tough to beat.
What about race fixing, especially in harness racing?
I'm not the one to ask about that in harness racing. In thoroughbred, I don't know if there's a whole lot of fixing going on. We have a major issue with drugs. I don't think there's any question about that. We have a major issue with penalizing people who do get caught with drugs or doing other illegal things. It's
these
definitely
are drugs
not as bad
for the
as
horse,
it used to be,
right?
But
these are drugs for the horse.
Correct. Well, in most cases, yes, the horse.
But the jockey can be as stoned as he wants.
That's happened as well. So, yeah, I don't think there's much throwing of races, but I do think there are situations where they're not trying to hit the board when they could, or something like that. I definitely think it's not all on the up and up.
Well, when you have two horses from the same stable running in the same race.
Yeah, I'd love it when they're uncoupled and you have one that's getting hammered at, you know, even money and the other one's 10-1. Seems like the 10-1 always wins. It's amazing how that happens.
Well, that sounds like an opportunity.
But
to
usually
bet.
They're coupled, right?
They're coupled, yeah. It's the rules vary by jurisdiction, and if they're coupled they have the same odds, so it doesn't matter who wins, but In those cases where they have the where they would be coupled in some jurisdictions and they're not in this one, you see some interesting stuff happen.
So let's say that I want to get into this. Where am I going to get the best rebates, and how do I go about getting them?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer. It completely depends on where you live. And how much you're going to bet, and all
really?
The things I mentioned
there were,
before.
I thought,
you know,
there were ADWs
the guys
in the
like
islands.
You could... Twin Spires, who you get a toaster if you bet $500,000. and so you have to do a little digging. And, you know, unfortunately, most of those people that do get rebates don't advertise because the big guys, you know, Churchill Downs and that kind of stuff, will not give them their signal. They'll say, well, you're giving rebates, you're giving people a better deal than we can, so you can't bet our tracks.
We had Don Johnson on the show a couple of years ago, and he apparently is a facilitator for getting people rebates. So we will try to get him back on the show one of these days.
Yeah, he's one of the biggest and best. I doubt he would say names either, but we'll see. I'll listen.
You don't live in Vegas. If you did live in Vegas, is it a good place to bet horses?
Well, I do go to Vegas at least 2 or 3 times a year for contests, and I don't really bet much. Just purely because my computer is still running back here, and I'm focused on tournaments. So it's too loud for me to – too loud and too much going on. I have a hard time focusing. So Vegas is not my favorite place to bet horses.
Well, and also you can't get the rebate here.
And I can't get a rebate. So financially it doesn't make any sense.
So we're not likely to see you move here in the near future.
No, probably not.
Suppose I'll never be to my video poker classes.
No, I have family and friends that live there, and I when I go out to Vegas, I go to their houses. I don't drink very much, and I don't party, and so it's too much for me. I like to go and get my work done and head back here where it's quiet and I can focus.
All right.
Do you gamble at any other things besides horses?
No. I'll play some 3-card poker just to have some drinks and hang out with friends. But no, I don't gamble at anything else. I don't like gambling if I don't have an edge, because I do it to make money and I don't do it to have fun.
Good.
Yeah, you're our kind of guy.
We've been talking to Charlie Davis, a successful horse bettor. Thank you very much, Charlie. Your talk was very informative.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
All righty. Did you learn anything from this, Munchkin? Now, you know some horse players, so you probably knew most of this anyway.
Yeah, and actually I'd like to just – there's a really good book called Gambling Wizards that has an interview with Alan Woods, who was, one of the original computer horse bettors. So people may want to pick that up and check it out.
Yeah, and you have such good Alan Woods, and he's dead now. So you can
dead, and he left an estate of over $1 billion. So and that money came from horse racing. So
yeah, there's so many other Alan Woods stories that you have, some of which can be told on the air. Although now we're on internet radio, maybe we can tell more of them on the air.
Yeah, actually, that's true. Yeah.
All right, let's do some commercials. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more games than anybody else has. For the entire month of July, there are 2 separate casino-wide progressives running 24/7 in the $600,000 Money Madness. The bigger of the 2 progressive begins at $10,000 and must be hit before $25,000. One winner will get the big prize each time, and everybody actively playing with a player's card earns $25 in free play when it goes off. Immediately thereafter, it starts again at $10,000 and begins to climb. Simultaneously with this is a progressive beginning at $1,000 and must be hit by $2,500. This too will start again immediately after it's hit and is predicted to be hit 3 times a day all month long. At the Palms, the weekly 7 p.m. drawings they've been pretty standard over the last several months. Their $10,000 pool is split. You need to claim the prize by midnight. There are multiple entries in the afternoon and the evenings on Friday. Play for prizes that ends this week, Friday, July 17th, is Chevron gas cards. You can collect up to $190 per day. Beginning next Monday, you'll be earning Albertson's gift card. Albertson is a supermarket. The gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Friday at a rate of 0.2%. You keep your points. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of games. You sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year. This allows you to get correction on most of the game. It's a good place to practice quick quads, for example. The game of the week is 100 play draw poker with Super Times Pay. Super Times Pay is a 6 coins per line game where approximately every 15 hands you're awarded a multiplier prior to the deal. The multiplier ranges from 2 times to 10 times. You don't need to make any strategy adjustment to play the game, and the game returns about 0.25% more than the same game without Super Times Pay. So if you found it on 9-6 jacks instead of playing 99.54, it's about 99.8. So it is a good deal for the players. All right. Next week, we're going to have one of our favorite guests. Bob Nersessian's coming back on. He's an attorney. And we usually find ways to get him excited and bounce off the ceilings. It's quite a bit of fun. One of the things we're going to talk about is in London recently, a group of blackjack players were counting cards, and the Playboy Casino says, "We think counting cards is cheating, so we're not going to pay you."
Yeah, well, basically, they're private clubs in London. And they said counting cards is against the rules of the club. So because you violated the rules, we're not going to pay you. And it doesn't look like they're going to get their money.
They took it to court. They had the same luck in a London court that Phil Ivey did.
Yeah.
So we're going to ask Bob Nersessian about that.
And actually, the player that it happened to, we had on quite a while back. People ask me about him all the time because his name is Casey, and he had a movie called Inside the Edge or something like that. Or
I don't remember the end of the movie. He was a blackjack player who kept getting kicked out of casinos.
Right, and he made this documentary about traveling around the country in an RV, just getting kicked out of everywhere. So anyway, that movie is finally almost done. I know we've been saying that for 5 years now, but it looks like it will be done maybe within the next month, and Casey has agreed to come on at that time, maybe with Chris, the filmmaker. And so we'll talk not only about London, but also about the movie.
All right. Now, I've been gone for several weeks. I wasn't really going to talk about my vacation, but right now we're killing time. I was on the Norwegian Jade searching for Richard's special game.
Secret game.
And I can report with a strong level of certainty that Richard's secret game, at least in July of 2015, is not on the Norwegian Jade. Am I correct on this, Richard?
That is true. And I just want to say you and Bob Nersessian were both in Italy at the same time. Coincidence? I don't think so.
Uh-huh. Well, Italy is kind of a big place.
True.
And we took two back-to-back weeks out of Venice, Italy. And on the Saturday between the cruises, spent a pleasant day walking around Venice. Venice is a great walking town.
Yeah. Not so good for swimming, but... I mean, it seems like tourism is kind of killing that city.
It is. And there are some big, big, big cruise ships that come in. So, like, when we were there, we were on a 2,000-passenger cruise ship. And there were, like, 6 of them in port the same day we were on one day of the week.
Wow.
And so the canals are built for these gondolas and these water buses. And you see a big cruise ship going down. It is... I suspect most Venetians think that's an eyesore.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, we should mention big news. Big in the news this week was that Yahoo has gotten into the daily fantasy sports business. So looks like that's going to be expanding a lot.
So is this a new
a new site. Yeah, a new site to bet daily fan to bet. Don't call it gambling. A new site to bet daily fantasy sports. And being Yahoo, hopefully they'll have liquidity. I mean, hopefully they'll have a lot of players signing up, and that should mean good opportunities.
Well, yeah. Well, there's a couple of the big ones do have big names behind it, and I heard on the radio this morning that some are. Now you can do fantasy golf. You can bet on the British Open this weekend.
Yeah.
They
had a fantasy video, World Series of Poker thing. That's the other thing, by the way, we should mention. World Series of Poker is just ending.
As of today, they are down to 27 people, and they will play today starting noonish, 3?
Noon, I think, yeah.
Until they get down to 9. Whether that happens at 6 p.m. or 6 a.m., they are going to go until they get down to 9. And then the biggest name still left is Daniel Negreanu. Daniel's been on the show a couple times.
Right.
I don't recognize most of the other names. There's a couple others that I've at least heard of. But Daniel, I've obviously, is one of the best, the biggest names in the,
poker, yeah. So
I guess I'm just rooting for the favor. I'm rooting, it's like I'd like to see him win that, but I happen to like the guy.
Brian Hastings made it very far. He has kind of been the center of controversy. He won two bracelets this WSOP and then made it to about 45 or 45th or something like that in the main event. There was a bit of controversy because I guess while he was here, he was playing at online under somebody else's name. And they considered that cheating. I mean, he was using a VPN to play from an account in England or something under somebody else's name. And so he's in the middle of a bit of a kerfuffle, but he certainly had a good WSOP. So,
yes. And good.
All right. So anyway, we encourage your questions. Please send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. We actually had a live tweet today from Vegas Horse Pool. So, we encourage you to listen live at Vegas All Net Radio, and then you can participate in the show. If you want the show delivered to you every week automatically, you can sign up to do that at YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. And you can find an archive of all the old shows at bobdancer.com. So I guess that's it for this show. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes and prepare for Bob Nersesian next week, bouncing off the ceilings. Thank you to Charlie Davis. Thank you, Richard. Goodbye, everybody.
Right.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge. Money.